Ready to dive in? Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Every episode, we explore, expand, and evolve our understanding of the truths we encounter and experience in our human quest for clarity and exponential growth. And now welcome your hosts, Dr. Jeffrey Smith and Jim Case. Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Dr. Jeff here, along with my fellow compatriot, Jim Case. How are you today, Jim?
I am well, Jeff. Thank you. Good to be here. Great to see you.
Right on.
I guess we're getting ready to dive in big time today.
Yes, periscopes down. We are going to dive to deep depths today.
Fantastic.
Looking at the topic of, are we ready for this? Little drum roll. We're going to talk about what makes one worthy, or to shorten all that up, the idea of worthiness and unworthiness. So,
do I have to bring out my dictionary?
Oh, sure. Yeah, let's start there. While Jim is looking at that, prior to our podcast today, we took a vote, and both of us voted that we thought this concept or aspect of life pretty much applies to everybody. So if you have never dealt with
only everybody. Wow.
So if you can't relate to this right now, chances are you know someone who can, and maybe you could tune in for their benefit, or at least arm yourself with some discussion that we're going to have regarding the topic that might be useful in your discussions with your loved ones in the near future.
Yes. So it's pretty, worthiness, pretty straightforward, the quality of being good enough, suitability, that's worthiness, the quality of deserving attention or respect, which is so interesting to me that it, and this has been happening with a number of our podcasts as we dive into these concepts. And so we start with the sort of what is the mass conscious, which is what I'm calling, what I see as the definition is the mass conscious agreement of what this thing is. And I'm finding more and more that these definitions are woefully inadequate.
Well, one is built upon the other. For like right now, it's about deserving. So then we'd have to go to deserving, because that was the foundation of worthiness, suitability and deserving. So maybe you could dig into that, but we're going to find ourselves on a rabbit trail.
Worthy of being treated in a particular way, typically of being given assistance. Oh, as the deserving one.
So deserving went back to worthiness?
Yeah.
So they're just pitching back and forth to each other?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty much.
So why don't we use those terms synonymously as well, that whether it's worthy or deserving, they appear to be very much a belief system that's one in the same. Mm. The suitability I thought was interesting, because that would imply maybe readiness or preparedness or qualifications, meeting the qualifications to receive a certain whatever it is. But attention was also mentioned, right? That was a core component of worthiness, was this aspect of to attend, to deserve a person's attention, a community's attention.
Yeah, that was the secondary definition, the quality of deserving attention or respect. Mm. Or the quality of being good enough, quote, or semicolon, suitability. He demonstrates his worthiness to rule, an argument about the moral worthiness of a nation's founders. So,
okay. Well, I'd like to take our discussion to the beginning of our experience here on the planet, would be infancy. And the notion that I'm operating on right now is that worthiness and or unworthiness would be a belief system that we have that gets built upon through our experiences that starts from the beginning. So oftentimes in my clinical practice, I have people, and as our listeners are enjoying our conjecture here, you're welcome to go through this guided imagery thing that I'm going to do, or just share as to how I help people get into this notion of worthiness, is to imagine the day that you were born. And I have people close their eyes, and oftentimes I have them just lightly tap on one knee and then the other knee at a really slow pace. It creates this mechanism in the brain that opens up in the way that it does at nighttime when we dream, that our imagination gets kicked off, and it also stimulates our sensory mind so that our dreams seem very, very real to us. So I ask people to close their eyes, do a deep breathing technique, begin the bilateral tapping, and just imagine being in the hospital room, if you were born in a hospital, the day that you were delivered, and to be there as your present self in observation of that moment of majestic occurrence when you showed up on the planet in the physical form, because it really was a celebration of you're here, you've arrived, and now the fun begins with a spanking or some, oh my gosh, I'm cold, wrap me up. Nevertheless, in order for a baby to be deserving of its mother's love and attention, the long and the short of sometimes an hour-long process and this experience I create for people in my office is to get to the notion or the idea that all a baby has to do to be deserving and worthy of its mother's love and affection and feeding and connection is it has to be present. That's it. And breathing. Breathing is kind of important. Moms kind of freak out, and so does the hospital staff. When babies aren't breathing, they'll wind up in NICU or something like that. But even then, they're still, because they're on the planet and they showed up, they were willing to come here. That's what makes us worthy to get the attention of the nurses, the doctors, the hospital staff, all the equipment in the NICU, or if everything turned out copacetic, you're handed to mom and she extends her arms and lovingly receives you, and you get the chest to chest, sometimes eye to eye contact of you're here and I'm so glad you're here. And all I want to do is love and connect with you and take care of you. And I'd like a little bit of sleep too, but there's really nothing. There's no thing that baby has to do to deserve to be tended to be cared for. Nothing in that first experience. Just breathe and be, and that's all it takes. So that's what I like to start from with regard to, in the beginning, there is no requirement. There is no condition. There is no suitability, right? That was a key word used in the definition, to be suitable. Even if baby doesn't have arms and legs, even if baby is cleft palate or there's some kind of birth defect, that doesn't cause mom to push baby away and say, no, I won't love you because you don't deserve. You're not suitable. This is what's so amazing about love and the mother-baby connection, is that it's just something that nature allows to happen, of a willingness to connect that's not based on performance. It's not based on conditions. It's not based on anything other than it's happening, and this is the natural course for it to go. Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts or comments just about what I've laid out to start with?
Only the I like the foundation, which is we are born worthy. There's no it's not a contrivance. And depending on, I know you're talking from a very clinical perspective, and which is awesome, because even in that perspective, it's obvious that there is no rating system. You know, it is what it is. But even beyond that is this idea that if as we understand it, that we are this spark of all that is, or God, or the universe, or that, you know, this infinite spark that has become physical. Well, there is nothing in anything that I'm aware of, you know, even in the context of religion, where God is ever less than worthy anywhere. So if that's the case, then the translation should be X equals X. You know, it's I am the spark of God. God is me. I am God. Therefore, I am. Therefore, it's all here. It's all complete. There's no. So I love that, because it gives a strong foundation for anyone to see that what you may be experiencing in terms of lack of worthiness are simply ideas and beliefs or experiences that you've internalized to say, I'm apparently not worthy because I didn't get X, Y, or Z, whatever that is.
So let's play the story out, and we're diving into this. How do we learn to believe such a thing as unworthiness exists? So if we backtrack to the moment of, you're doing the tapping, you got your eyes closed, you're doing this deep breathing, you're having this guided imagery experience of watching yourself be handed to mom for the first time, and the acceptance, connection, bonding, unconditional love, all that stuff happening naturally. And that's actually, for a lot of people, quite profound for them to see that, where they've only imagined it before. But when you get visual and sensory parts of the mind working together to recreate that, there's a shift that takes place that dispels oftentimes a lifetime of disbeliefs of, I wasn't loved, I'm not lovable, and blah, 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 blah. But here's a really cool part too. So after I have the person then come alongside the bed, if they were standing on the other side of the delivery room, kind of observing like a fly on the wall, I have them get involved and step up, come next to the bed that mom is in, bend over, look in mom's eyes, look at that mystic, indescribable eye contact that she's having with you as an infant. Just look at that, behold that for a moment, experience that, feel that gaze that's happening there. There really aren't words that adequately describe that, in my opinion. And so they do that, and oftentimes tears start to flow, and they're not sad tears by any means. They're just these, again, this emotion of acceptance and connection. Mm-hmm. So then I ask the person, okay, now with mom's permission, I want you to hold your infant newborn self. So you're next to the bed, extend your arms, mom will hand you to you. And now for the first time, you get to have this compelling, profound experience of, you're no longer needing mom to look at you, hold you, love you, nurture you. You are now doing it yourself. And all you have to do is be open and willing to hold newborn infant, just showed up, little you, and you will naturally do the same thing that mom did. You will naturally just smile and just have this heartwarming, melting, engaging, this thing that I'm, this thing that's happening to me right now happens over and over and over and again. And I'm so honored to be able to get to participate in that experience with people, to help them see that my worthiness, my acceptability is now coming from me. It's coming from me to me. It's no longer based on mom and everything that happened since my delivery. It's no longer happening all these other conditions that we learn along the way. Yeah. So anyway, it's the beginning of self-love and acceptance, worthiness, that I have the privilege of being able to guide people through. I don't know how I tripped upon that or came upon that. I'm just going to say God gave it to me, or the universe gave it to me as a protocol to use. But it's quite lovely.
Right.
From that point forward, then I have people like hand baby self back to mom. And then we start doing, okay, let's look at this a month from now. So within a month's time, the expectations put upon infant self are that you have to make eye contact with mommy. And if mommy's sad, you'll smile and giggle, and that'll make mommy laugh and giggle, and she'll want to hold you more and give you some milk to drink. And so you quickly learn that you become responsible for mommy's moods so that you get held and comforted and fed. And you learn how to do that quickly. And then you roll over, and that's exciting. And then you sit up one day and you stand up and you laugh and giggle and you learn words. And little by little, there are all these things that we're expected to do. Now we're walking around. We get taught we have to clean up our toys. We have to make our bed. We have to help around the house. At one point, we have to learn to ride a bike. We go to school. We have to get decent grades, get smiley faces on our homework and our gold stars on our tests, and make sure mommy, daddy don't get called in to talk to the teacher in a parent-teacher conference. And if we do, oh no,
right.
they're going to withhold love and affection from me, which proves I'm not worthy, because it all becomes performance-based on what I do or what I don't do. And we believe that. We believe that stuff.
So as you were going through that process, I was keenly focused in trying to ascertain at what point do we adopt the idea of unworthiness? Because it's not inherent, so it's not a part of the origin experience.
Right.
So it has to be introduced. So thinking in terms of infancy and your choice of words was interesting, because you were attributing some, I'm going to use this word, probably not the best word, but you were attributing motive to the child in its effort to do what it did in order to achieve a specific result. That feels kind of weird to me.
It is weird.
It's weird because that's assuming a level of understanding of circumstance that you could do that. You know what I mean? So I'm thinking, okay, so the initial experience is the connection. So I was starting from the very beginning. So what happens if you're looking at this, you're in this situation, you're looking at your mom and you don't see that connectedness? What happens then?
Baby cries.
But baby cries anyway. Baby cries coming out of the womb, baby cries.
Well,
that's part of the breathing thing.
The studies, so there's an opportunity. If I as baby can get mommy to smile and laugh and go, oh, you're so cute, goochie goochie goo, and I'm enjoying this oxytocin bond that's happening right now. If baby cannot achieve that, it will cry to still get the attention that it needs. So it'll first try positive, and if that doesn't work, then it'll go negative.
So actually, what I think, what I was just seeing as you were talking about that, is that it's not a cognitive rational process like you're describing it. It's actually energy. It's experiencing sensation,
yeah,
and recognizing there's a positive, there's this energy flow that feels good. I want more of that. Oh, well, when, and I don't even know that there's a, I did that, that happened. There's not enough, I don't think there's enough firing going on to make that choice. But I do think that, and I'm not a scientist. I've said that 100,000 times, but logically, energetically, I'm trying to connect those dots to say, okay, so this is a very powerful and a very important topic, because it so sources so many of our experiences that, and I'm sorry, all of our experiences, let's clarify that, because we're all born, we all have that moment, we all have those, there was no other way to get here but that. So even if you came in a petri dish, you still had a mom somewhere that at the moment of birth you were there. So The point being that it's a universal experience. So we say energy. So, and I talk about this in my book too, this idea that kids are, they're sponges. They're not sentient in the sense that they're not putting A, B, C, D together. They're experiencing an energy and having a response to that energy. They're experiencing another energy and having a response. And as you say, okay, so let's add to that then, as they're having responses, if that response gives a positive experience, then they're going to generate more of whatever that is. And if there's an absence of energy, then that absence of energy feels like separation, and that separation is stressful. So that causes tears or crying or screaming or some kind of something to shed light on this moment of separation that needs to not be here according to the child. In energetic form. So I'm walking with your words and trying to do my thing of follow the energy. Where does the energy go? So I'm saying, okay, so initially it's sort of this, not tactile, but energetic experience that grows into more of a worldly experience. But what do you think that the assessment or the, at what point does it assess as unworthiness or worthiness? What point does it shift from just being an energetic exchange? And this is, now that I'm in a body, I have to, and now that we are actually physically separate, because we weren't before, we were all energy before, now we're separate. And so now I can experience this separation. And within the context of this separation has to be the concept of worthiness or unworthiness somewhere in there, that void somehow. You following where I'm going?
Well, yeah, what I think I'm hearing you say is we call it separation anxiety, and it begins very, very early in that an infant really does not know how to operate in a state of separateness, in a separate self, or this idea of separateness. And what's funny to me, having come full circle now, where the scientist in me 20 years ago would have been all about separation and individuation as a process that, you know, we're hoping to complete by 18 or 19 years old, so that junior or, you know, daughter can go off and have a great life. But, you know, metaphysically, we know that there is no separateness. There's unity and oneness. So it's the illusion of separateness that is really kicking off this thing we call separation anxiety. One of the things that I remember from grad school was a rhesus monkey experiment. They called it the wire monkey experiment. Mm-hmm. So these baby, very, very young baby monkeys were in a nursery that only had wire skeleton mommies to hold them. They weren't real mommy monkeys. They had the exterior fur like mommy monkey, but they were just wire mommies that had arms that could be held, and they didn't have the energy, right? Because they weren't a living being.
Right.
And this led to the term that we call failure to thrive. Hmm. Within 40 days, all those baby monkeys died.
Wow.
They got fed. There was a bottle. Mommy could hold the bottle and baby would drink, but they didn't have the energy. They didn't have the emotional connection. Nurturing. They didn't have that hard to define energetic life force energy that was being transmitted and, you know, given and received. So the baby didn't receive it, couldn't transmit it. And little by little, all systems shut down and they failed to thrive. And that happens in humans as well. It doesn't happen as quickly because generally you can't just ignore a baby. Most kids don't just get ignored for 40 straight days.
Yeah.
But there will be a point at which they do fail to thrive and sometimes die.
So that's interesting. So the fail to thrive is the foundation of which is lack of connection.
Mm-hmm. Exposure to energy. That's how you would say it, right?
Yes. So so here I am in this, I started in this environment, I grew in this environment of connectedness. I grew in this environment of alignment, of unity, of all of that. And then suddenly I'm thrust out into this new experience, this physical reality that previous to now I had no experience with, that I think that I'm aware of. So the umbilical cord is still connected initially. So there's still, so the separation anxiety begins at the, once the umbilical cord is officially cut, because now there is no literal connection between the two physical beings except energy. So over time, there were so many things going on. So I was thinking about things like breastfeeding, and the importance of breastfeeding, and why that, what, given the inability to thrive that we were talking about when they were fed without and with no energy, that's just interesting. Again, looking for the thread of where does the worthiness piece show up?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not seeing it just yet. I'm seeing a lot of things that, I mean, and we're talking about a lot of different things. So as we migrate through this now, at what point in the development of the child, so what, they're like two-ish when the cognitive ability starts to layer in more? Is that right? Two, three-ish?
Mm-hmm.
So you get language. You get language and association. You get thought. You get, now you're getting into actual emotion instead of expression. Because I don't know that you could call the previous cycle emotion so much as if you're just recognizing energy that's not there and you're looking for ways to call it out and you don't have language yet and you don't have cognitive ability yet. All you know is this separation feeling isn't working for me. So you find vocal cords and you start wailing.
Mm-hmm.
Send the alarm, sound the alarm, sound the alarm, right? The alarm has the desired effect. Typically the reconnection will occur, or the connection will occur again. And then the idea being that over time, so say over the course of the first year, there is a sense of that separation is taking place regardless, because it has to, because you're two physical bodies now. So the first year is learning how to adjust to that separation, say, maybe first year and a half, some maybe longer, some maybe shorter. But it's still all energy. It's still all good energy, bad energy. What is it? Until I suddenly have a way to identify. So now I have ways to identify. I can identify mom. I can identify dad. I can identify dog, you know, and those begin to ramp up. And now what?
Now what?
Well, now what? So now I've got some, I've got basic cognitive ability. I've got some basic language skills. Now my responses are more to environment than they are to energy. And it's probably a little mix of both. So now, because I can identify, I can touch things, I can pick things up, I'm now more firmly rooted in the physical world. I recognize that me and mom are two different people, or two separate entities. We're not one entity anymore, even though I may not be able to you couldn't necessarily put words to that, but we're just looking at the process. So now, is the worthiness piece in play yet? Is the worthiness piece in play at that juncture? And how would it be in play at that juncture?
Well, it's for each person, of course, the road to unworthiness is going to be traveled at a different pace, because some kids get nurture and bonding. I mean, just, you were talking about breastfeeding a little bit ago, and one of the things, to my knowledge, that has not yet been discovered is how to synthetically produce oxytocin and put that in baby formula, so that when baby is drinking the bottle and somebody's holding it, it still has the experience in the pituitary gland of the oxytocin, which creates the experience of connection and unity. So that's an important, you know, that all the studies that were done on the benefits of mother's milk versus not mother's milk, it had more to do, in my opinion, less to do with the nutritional value of it and more to do with the neurotransmitters that ultimately relate or give the experience of connection and oneness that's happening both for mother and for baby. And as long as connection is in play, I believe that the correlation is, if I'm strongly connected and accepted, worthiness is going to go right along with that. I think that if you put a numerical value to my experience of acceptance and connection, the same number would show up for worthiness. And as that number decreases over time, I think that the number for worthiness decreases. And at some point you go negative and that becomes unworthy.
So on a, let's say we're going to, just so that we can really address the scope. So we're going to use a scale of 1 to 10, one being an individual, and then 10 being all humans. And we could say 7.5 billion, 1 and 7.5 billion. How many, even as a percentage, how many people would you say that exist on the planet have worthiness issues?
Well, we talked beforehand, we said everybody, okay. But there's a scope or a scale of that. And there's probably also triggers and conditions and how often and how much and that sort of thing.
Right. So there's, that's all by degree. My point is getting to the root of this idea of, if it's affecting everyone, there has to be sort of a universal place that it becomes part of it. I'm beginning to wonder if that doesn't happen as a part of the separation process. That if the it's virtually seems like between the combination of things. When I say the separation process, from the point that the umbilical cord is cut and that first year and a half or so, maybe 2 years as you're moving out of that complete infancy and inability to do anything for yourself. Where is the, it seems to me there has to be a juncture there somewhere, whether it's through the breastfeeding process, whether it's through whatever habits were adopted about how we put the kids to bed and how we get them up and how we do whatever we do. It's sort of blowing my mind. I mean, we say it sort of casually, but it's, as we're talking more, it's sort of blowing my mind that everyone suffers in this capacity in mm-hmm. some form or another. How is that possible? Like, how is that a thing? How is it, where does it occur that we all get it in some form or another? Well, the only place that seems logical is the point of recognition that I am no longer a part of you.
Right. Yeah.
So is that process in and of itself stimulate a sense of, I must not be worthy because I've been, now I'm separate from what was the love. I'm separate from that union. I'm separate from, there's so many, I remember years ago, I don't hear it as much anymore, but years ago there was a lot of conversation and stuff in the metaphysical community to that idea, that it was traced back to the idea that we became physical, and because of that, it sets up this dynamic by virtue of becoming physical, by virtue of being born.
Sure.
And I don't know if you remember much of those conversations, but the original idea of separation, I remember going through seminars years and years ago, where the idea was to drill into finding that core belief or core misbelief about separation that typically takes place. Now, a lot of times it was attributed to the whole Adam and Eve thing, and that it was really, really about the separation from God and being kicked out of the Garden of Eden and all that kind of stuff that we know is largely fairy tale, but there is something to the separation process that seems to stimulate this in all human existence. And to what end? Because then it becomes a mission of rediscovering worthiness or rediscovering somehow that I am worthy or that I was never without worthiness. It's almost like a perspective thing, not a feeling thing. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah. So I think backtracking to your question of 1 in 10 and an individual and all of society, and is anybody immune to this? I would just call it part of the human condition. And I think you described it eloquently when you were just talking about we jump into these physical incarnations coming from an awareness or an experience of unity and allness and oneness in that spiritual place before we jumped into these body suits. And then we get the brain wipe, or we get the mind wipe that allows us to have this experience like it's really happening and it's really real. And this is the first time I've been here with no recollection of where I came from, and without working with a medium or a spiritual person to help you see that, oh yeah, you can actually follow the breadcrumbs to your past and see where you came from. You can connect with your higher self. You can go back and review past lives. Some people are even skilled to help folks jump into the future and see and experience what they'll be like in the future. But for most people, they're watching Netflix. I know it sounds so judgmental, but come on, people, be honest with yourselves. You are, all right? You are. Deal with it. And we're not, you know, we're just living these lives. So I think my answer is, it's part of the human condition, this notion of separateness. And with that comes a level of unworthiness.
Yeah, and so that is either exacerbated or diminished then over the course of the next 3 or 4 years in childhood development, based on the relationship that the parent then establishes with the child, or the connection that the child that the parent and the child have over those intervening years. So we're saying, starting, you know, that first little bit, it's all energy, it's exchange of energy, it's this back and forth. So there's still this sense of connectedness, but it's still disconcerting, because now I'm not vibing in the vibe, I'm vibing out of the vibe. And so sometimes I'm next to the breast, I'm in the vibe. Other times I'm not in the vibe, I'm somewhere else. I'm not touching my mother. I don't, you know, what is the deal? Where is she? Why, you know, why am I feeling disconnected? Evolving into, now I'm having rational thought. I'm being able to connect dots. I'm being able to identify. I'm being able to feel. I can see things now that I couldn't see before. I can go, oh, I want that. I want to touch that. I want to mess with that. I want to do whatever. As you were talking, you went into, and you know, we get to school. So now we're, you know, we've gotten to 5, 6, 7. We're getting into preschool, we'll say, because that's a good place to start. So by now, the determination of worthiness to me seems like it would be established at this point, because these are those informative years. These are the foundational years. And if we all come in and have this experience based on the separation experience, is what I'm assuming that based on what we're seeing and what we're talking about, that now, that internal mechanism is already kind of determined at that rate. So now I'm going into preschool. Now I'm going into a whole other level of involvement into the physical world.
Right. Now,
this is true absolute separation, because now it's not just mom's in the other room. Mom dumped me off in some place with some strange person, and now I got to stay there for however many hour length of time, and mom is totally absent.
Sure. But so, generally at that age, little kid has some item, a blanket, a dolly, a toy, that is their love object, or what we call, allows them to have object constancy. It's their security blanket. Mm-hmm. That they're connecting with is this physical thing allows me to still know that I'm connected. I have a connection to something. And oftentimes, well, not oftentimes, then the task at hand, as you talked about going to preschool or kindergarten or whatever, you are now faced with the, can I transfer the love or lack of the connection or lack of, can I transfer that from the parental environment, the core nuclear family environment, can I transfer that to teacher? And can I transfer that to peers? Mm-hmm. And even if it went really well in the core family, mommy and daddy are very attentive, they're very involved, they're very loving, maybe they spoiled me a little bit too much, and I'm so used to that attention that when I get to school, teacher can't give me the same level of attention mommy did, so I become a pain in the ass to teacher, mm-hmm. and the other students recognize that, and now I can't transfer the love and experience and the connection and bonding that I had at home to school, because I don't know how to do that. I need more. I was trained that I need more, and that doesn't show up for me at school. So even though I'm getting it home, I cannot get it outside of home. So that happens in some cases. And also where you didn't get it at home, all of a sudden, wow, I actually feel more connected and accepted and trust my teachers more than my own parents.
Yeah.
Or I've learned how to really have good friends, and it's my friends that are more important to me than my family members. So it's like it's a new game. You have to learn a new game of how do I feel good about me based on the connections and attachments I have with others. Mm-hmm. It's that they're not always directly transferable.
But the basis of my understanding of worth, my worthiness going into that environment is all driven off of the relationship that I have within the context of whatever my family is.
It's all externally motivated and right. driven, because we haven't learned how to do that internally.
Yes.
And that's what the power of that exercise that I shared in the beginning was, is that you saw that you showed up that way and nothing's really changed. The fact that you're here and you're breathing and you're showing up is the only thing required for you to be worthy. That's it.
Yes. And so the evolution of, because what I was seeing again as you were talking was this, so for the child who has a supportive environment in the home where that idea of self-worth is constantly reflected and is constantly supported, not just by words, but by the child, because as a child, there's still the sensitivity to the environment, the even 3, 4, 5, 6, you're still eminently very sensitive to energy and the inflow and influx of energy. And there's a lot of things that I think we end up making decisions on based on feeling, based on energy that is not supported by facts. And that's an interesting dynamic to me, because it seems like once that choice of I'm apparently not good enough, I'm apparently not in, like, where do you get that concept? There has to be a point where cognitively you have to be able to understand it to adopt it, don't you?
Well, finish the sentence. I'm not good enough for what?
Well, it's going to be situational, I'm assuming.
Well, if you're just talking about relationship and connection, I'm not good enough for what?
I'm not good enough for the teacher's love. I'm not good enough for this person's attention.
Yes.
Not good enough for.
So what kid could always capture mommy or daddy, or mommy and mommy, or daddy and daddy's attention? What kid could ever do that? Nobody. Yeah. Even if you and I hung out for 3 straight days and my task was to capture your attention for 72 straight hours, is that freaking possible?
Without getting smacked? No.
So if I can't do that as an adult, how the heck would I do that as a kid? And if I felt like my worthiness was dependent on your attention, it's a complete setup for failure.
So we're again back to separation.
Mm-hmm.
We're back to the source of the unworthiness is the belief that there's separation because of the physical reality of two bodies.
Yeah.
So we come in already kind of juiced to this idea. No, that's backwards. Seems like we come in fully wired and connected, and the environment sort of inflicts this separation because of the nature of the environment. It's not because it's a bad environment. It's just it's going from non-physical to physical. It's going from pure energy state to pure physical state with energy. So it's a whole the whole thing is like a circus. This is so interesting to me as well, because it's really hearkening back to our previous podcast about artificial intelligence and all the things we had talked to about that, because again, as we're talking about this, and I'm kind of walking through it going, wow, really? So it almost seems like it almost seems set up to create that experience in order to, so come back to the idea of contrast. You know, in Law of Attraction, they use contrast a lot as opposed to problems or issues, just contrast, which I really love because it doesn't assign a negative or positive anything. It's just, it's a rub. It's something that rubs your experience in a way that makes you pay attention. So here is this initial blast of contrast, this initial blast of becoming a physical being in the world, and within the same context, experiencing the idea of separation or experiencing separation in a way that's never been experienced before by you in this circumstance. Now, I'm saying that not necessarily attributing to how many lives you may have shown up, because apparently we don't remember all of that. So I'm going to keep it at the one-off and figure from there. So worthiness evolves out of this idea that we're separate. And so that's exacerbated then. So maybe it's just it's a feeling initially. It's a sensation.
Can we also, what I think just happened in the last 5 minutes in our dialogue here is that I reintroduced one of the key terms in the definition that you looked up at the beginning of attending or attention. Mm-hmm. So if I'm not having the experience that enough people external to me are attending to me, mm-hmm. that is my clue and cue that there must be something I'm deficient. And that's the introduction of unworthiness. And how doggone unfair is that if you've got a little kid who's completely lovable and adorable, but comes into a family where they all have attention deficit disorder? or mommy and daddy are blind, or there's just, you know, these, or they're in a war-torn country where they're just focused on survival and nighttime tuck you in and read you a story just isn't happening, you know? It's just.
Well, but that comes back to that core premise too, though, that, you know, we choose the environment coming in. We set all of those choices, the choice of the parents and all of that is something we create in advance. I mean, we say, this is the environment that's going to best suit us for this experience. And apparently the process of feeling unworthy and separation is an integral part of this experience.
Yeah. So you said we were doing one-off, but now you're backtracking and now you're setting it up like, you know, we had some knowing in advance of coming here and doing all this, which is profoundly beneficial to somebody if they're willing to open up to that. That is life transforming right there. It helps me understand that, okay, I was born into a family. I chose to be born into a family that could not attend to me at the average level. I was born in a time or in a country where all there's conflict is going on and nobody can pay attention to me, but I chose that. So the life lesson for me in that path is that I'm starting at a place further down or further back than the average person to still arrive at the point where I can truly love and accept myself. And I can attend to me because there is no separation. That takes a lifetime for most people, and most people don't get there.
Right.
But I believe that that's the goal that we're trying to attain. And we set these conditions up for ourselves, perhaps, each time we come here. Maybe we set it up to be more difficult. Just like I was a brown belt last time. I'm going to go for black belt level martial arts, which means I got to do this with one hand tied behind my back.
Yeah, I guess, because the funny thing is that the end result is the thing you seek, right? If we understand anything about the process of transitioning, it's completely believed that once you shake this, you're back to the non-physical. Worthiness is not a thing.
Right.
It's not a thing. It doesn't exist in that. There is immediate communion and reunion and you know, and connection, and all of that is right. Boom. It's right there. So this experience is what's in the way. And maybe that's so. I'm just, you know, I have a scientific brain, even though I'm not a scientific person, or maybe I am. I don't know. But the point is that trying to pull that thread is really fascinating, because now I'm saying, okay, you come in, you experience this separation, you spend a lifetime trying to rectify that sense of unworthiness and separation so that you can transition to experience what that connection and worthiness feels like. What?
Yep.
To what end? Because you're going to get there anyway.
Yep.
So that then speaks to this idea of, oh God, there's so many, like, whom, you know, going back to this idea of purpose, and purpose is we are, that's what we are. We're purpose. So you come into this experience thinking or believing or fully aligned with this idea of intention. So I'm focusing. So now it's about this experience is focusing energy in a way that it hasn't been focused before. And by virtue of that experience comes with a little bit of rub, and that rub is, yeah, you are a spark. Yeah, you are ultimately all connected. But the rub is, you're not going to think you are. The rub is, being in time and space and being physical means you're in individual bodies as opposed to beings, which is a vastly different experience. So there's no, you know, there's having to communicate, there's having to use words, there's having to express thoughts, there's all of that going on, and then there's interpretation, and then there's texting, and then there, you know, is all this communication level that distorts the picture, distorts so much of whatever the energetic experience is, because it's all translated by whatever the filters are going on with each individual. Sorry, I'm rambling. I know I'm ferreting out here. I'm seeing all this stuff and kind of going, wow, okay, where do we go now? Where do we take this that makes it a useful tool to understand the importance of worthiness and the unimportance of worthiness?
Right. The examples that I could think of beings who have made significant progress in living in a state of worthiness would be people that have really embraced this idea of metaphysics and unity and oneness and allness through recognizing that the larger percentage, I mean, this bodysuit and this life we're living is just a fraction of who and what we really are. Yeah. It's just an illusion. And if you could, through a practice of mindfulness, just be telling yourself that all the time and not go back to sleep in the food that we're eating and the TV shows that we're watching and the forms of entertainment that we're exposing ourselves to and the grind that we call work, all of that is just part of being asleep, of living in the state of the physical, which is going to include, according to the Buddhists, suffering. And according to the experts at Adventures in Truth podcast, is also going to include some amount of unworthiness through the inability for the external people around us to attend to us the way we want to be attended to, as if we're separate. So the people that have transitioned or who have transformed themselves do see themselves as one with all. There is no, they've transcended. There's no thoughts of separateness left within them, to the point that some, according, I mean, there's sacred texts, you go check them out yourself, that don't require sleep, don't require food, are able to astral project and walk through walls and all the miracles. They're not just of old, they're still here being practiced by some today.
Yeah.
who these beings draw people to them. They're a nuclear dynamo of energy, and they attract people that want to sit at their feet and just bathe in that energy.
Yeah.
And And that expression.
The expression that I love this expression too, that one who is aligned and connected is more powerful than 1,000 who are not. That it's that big a deal. It's that important to find that place of reconnection within the self. This topic was generated because I just recently had an experience where I came into this profound awareness of this sort of unworthiness, and I was blown away by it because it was so deeply, deeply rooted that I was overwhelmed in the moment of it. I think it was, we were talking earlier, I take a little different approach to this stuff because for me to have that experience was very, very powerful. But I believe very strongly that the idea of becoming conscious is about changing the difference between what's unconscious and what's conscious. And that as something becomes conscious, you now have the ability to interact with it in a way that you didn't have before, because now you know it's there, you know what it is, and you know that it exists. So now the question is, what now? What do you do with that once you've understood it, or once you've experienced it? And so that's sort of where I am, is letting this evolve without trying to create a story about why I feel separate, or what the feeling of separation or the feeling of unworthiness, what the source was. I didn't even spend a second going there, because immediately it felt like that would be stimulating more unworthiness, because it's sort of focusing on the problem instead of, and it's not that it is necessarily a problem, it's an awareness. So now that there's an awareness, where does it go from there? So I want to be in a space to let that energy move on or transform or whatever it does, wherever you go from the point of feeling unworthiness to a point of recognizing the vast worthiness that exists. I don't think that's done by pushing and digging and finding and doing all that. It just feels like the natural thing is, okay, I'm aware it's there. Now, how can I apply that awareness? How can I be in alignment with that? What can I do with this awareness in a way that lets this reconnection take place?
Right.
And I don't have the answer for that yet, because it's still very fresh. So it's also for those listening too, it's also why my intensity is a little more focused this time, because there's a lot to this topic that's so powerful and so deep, and I really want to flesh it out, not only for me but for the listeners, so that you can take that into your own experience. And some of it will resonate and some of it won't, but much of it will help to stimulate the various levels in your own consciousness, so that you can start to think, that's an interesting thought I'd not had before. Where does that take me? Mm-hmm. And let it carry you into your own consciousness, so that that understanding of your idea of unworthiness or separation can unfold, and kind of, it's sort of like opening a flower. It unfolds for you at some point to recognize this is an important juncture. This is an important awareness. Be in that awareness. I think as human beings, we tend to want to go after it. There it is. There's the problem. I'm going to go fix it. That's not what this is. And I don't think it can be handled from that perspective.
Right. I'm wondering if, without it being too personal or going into all the details of your awareness of an experience of unworthiness, could you apply what we've arrived at, that was there some lack of attention? Was someone or something or in some way, was it a lack of being attended to, mm-hmm. that was creating some of the sense of unworthiness?
I definitely think so. I and I'll tell you that I have, from a very young age and through all of my adult life, the one prevailing experience that I had with my dad was that I knew he didn't like me from the word go. Like, I don't know why. It was something that I had that as I, over the years, it was just an awareness that I had that he just didn't like me. it doesn't mean he didn't love me, but he certainly didn't like me. And being the person that he was, that just meant less attention.
Right.
It just meant I don't put my attention there.
Right.
So, how that evolved, I don't know, because again, I don't know. I don't know how important it is to yet. I don't know yet how important it is to understand the evolution as it is to just release the energy.
Could we just go back to what you were establishing earlier that
I don't mean that as a way to shut down the conversation.
No.
I'm just saying as a in a grand scheme of things, for purposes of this, I'm happy to talk about any of it. So
I was just wondering if it might fit that you asked him to play this role. It was a screenplay that you wrote and you showed up this way and he followed the script.
He did.
So that you could learn.
I think ultimately what is true for everybody is so I could learn about who I am and who, what is it I feel? What do I experience that's different from what he experiences? And to understand that just because he was having an experience doesn't mean I have to have a correlating experience, meaning that was his life and his experience. But one of the biggest challenges of consciousness is, and the expansion of consciousness, you see it every day, all the time throughout the metaphysical community, is this idea of, needing to please other people, or people need to act a certain way, or you need to act a certain way in order to get certain attention or to get what you need, or that other people's viewpoint or opinion is important to who you are, or, you know, any of all that stuff. And I think that absent of story, we make it up. So, you know, my dad was young. He was 18 years old when they had me. My mom was 16 and 3/4.
We have that in common. Did you know that?
I did
my
not.
My mom was 17. My dad was 19.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So, you know, thinking of myself at that age, what?
Kids raising kids. That's what I've always said.
Yeah. So, you know, thinking about, and this is, you know, the early 60s. It's a whole different world. And he was busy about the business of, you know, this was a huge revelation for me not many years ago about my dad. As much as I might have not been happy about the context of our relationship, the reality is he showed up every day. He went to work. He provided home. He provided clothes. He provided. That's what he did and what he knew how to do. So there was never a point that he didn't do the functions of the job. He just wasn't available at all emotionally. And that, I think, had a profound impact on this vibrant little human being who was coming into the world with both barrels going, let's go. You know, where are we going? What are we doing? Who's next? What's up? And I don't think that was, I don't think it was well received because of what he had experienced in his world. He couldn't receive it. So his inability to receive it and my inability to understand why seems to have created a chasm. And that chasm was, I must not be good enough because I can't translate what I know to him. And it's not having any impact, nor does he seem to have any interest. So two things combined, that starts the question of what's wrong with me? Because to be totally honest, that question has been, again, as far back as I can remember, if something goes wrong in my world, my first thought is what's wrong with me?
Right.
It's not what happened. It's what did I do?
Writing this down. The what's wrong with me, I believe, would be an amazing title for a children's book.
Oh.
Like, Are You My Mother? That Dr. Seuss book, Are You My Mother? Wow.
That's cool.
Don't know that I'll write it, but maybe.
Maybe I will. Maybe we'll do it together.
That'd be cool.
That's
kind of cool. How fun would that be to get 5-year-olds to realize there's nothing wrong with me. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I'm just looking for more attention than it's possible for the universe to give to me so that I can learn to do that myself. And wouldn't that be cool if in the story, we could have examples of how kids could do that, stand in front of the mirror and wave or smile or kiss yourself in the mirror, or, you know, learn how to give yourself a hug.
Yeah.
You know, just all these little things that are just pouring in right now.
That's, I love that.
Fun.
And what a great place to impact.
Yeah.
You know, if you could bridge that gap way early. And of course some have, some I think, you know, have bridged it. Cause I mean, I don't think, while I think that there's, you know, the worthiness is a scale like you were talking about earlier. Some are way on the extreme of not worthy, and others are just on the fringes of not worthy. And probably the ones on the fringes of not worthy at the beginning side probably is more, not so much core issue related as environmentally related. Do you understand what I mean by that? So that's mm-hmm. more like, oh, Joey didn't like me in first grade, and how come my teacher in second grade acted like I was a stupid person, and, you know, things like that that aren't related to the core family experience. So they're more peripheral kind of, oh, well, maybe something's wrong with me, but over here they're telling me I'm an awesome human being and they love me and they give me everything I need. So probably not a big deal, but I need that person to sign my paper so I can get a job, or I need that person, you know, it suddenly becomes a little bit more of a thing, but it's more fringe. I don't even know that I'm describing that right. But so another arm of this that just flopped into my head. So I wonder if the lack of worthiness is part of the universal consciousness on the planet, like it's a mass conscious belief system, and that it could be shifted or changed, or is it just part of the grand experiment?
I'd say all of the above.
It's just amazing that the more we dive into this, the clearer it gets and the foggier it gets.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
Craziness.
It's like we have this idea that we're peeling the layers of the onion that will eventually get to the center of the onion, not realizing that it's a bag of onions that we're peeling.
It's one freaking mega onion. Yeah, Jesus. Incredible. So where are we? We are at about that juncture, I think. A lot of energy on this conversation, a lot of good stuff. This one definitely feels like we might want to break it down into some subtopics to maybe for future stuff.
I agree. Yeah.
Because there's so many moving parts, but I think the core thing that we're trying to get to here is bringing an awareness of the fact that we didn't come in with this concept of unworthiness. It's, we were born completely, fully realized worth. And the process of separation by becoming a physical being creates a contrast or a rub in the experience that translates into separation. It translates into this concept that we are separate because we are now physically observing a separation between me and you. Because I'm a physical thing here that's not connected to anything that you have right now. It's just two beings. And that's just, you know, I'm using that as in course with mom and dad and kids and stuff. So so we're saying that somewhere in that potential in that separation is where the unworthiness begins to take hold, if it takes hold, because it's sort of a relationship between what's happening in the family and what's happening outside in the environment. So they build on each other a bit. Am I good so far?
Yep. Yep.
And so you introduced an amazing tool and a visualization that I hope people go back and listen to, you know, at the beginning of this podcast, that can help to bring you to a place of recognizing that wholeness that existed while you were on the planet. Like there was a point in the beginning where that wholeness was all there.
Yep.
And that love and connection was all there.
Yep. Even if it was a nurse.
Yeah.
Even if it was a nurse who first held you, someone first held you, and there was a tender moment there that occurred, even if it wasn't mom, even if you were given up in adoption right away and the bonding thing didn't happen, a nurse did. Someone did.
That's a really good point.
If you really being stubborn and want to believe that no one did, then you do it. Go back and listen to the beginning of this podcast and let yourself go through the guided imagery, and you be the one that picked yourself up out of the little nursery room that you were, wherever you wound up. You do it. You pick yourself up and look in your eyes and realize you were whole and complete and lacked for nothing and were completely deserving. And when you're willing to attend to yourself, we will stop looking for the world to do it for us. That's the journey we're on.
Can't make it even more concise than that. that speaks to it very, very well. The other thought that comes to mind is, as a way of bringing this full circle, sort of, is a recognition that the important part of this understanding of worthiness is that it was a choice somewhere in your experience. Unworthiness is not inflicted on you, it's chosen by you. Mm-hmm. And that's a very clear and important distinction, because it doesn't ultimately matter what any other human being thinks of you. It's what you think of you that matters.
Yep.
And if your brain is full of all those other voices telling you you're not good enough, it's just the story your mind has created to make you feel safe in the experience of being separate. Does that make sense?
It sure does, Jim. And I'd like to drive this home and make it a little personal here.
Please.
In the world that we live in presently, attendance is what we use to gauge importance and influence. For example, we're working toward creating more attendance of this podcast. We would like people to attend to the concepts and principles and ideas that we're sharing. And from my heart and from your heart, I know both of us well enough that it's coming from more of a place that we're teachers. You and I are on the planet with the gift of teaching and intelligence and academics and research. We're lifelong learners. Mm-hmm. And what rocks our world is to be able to share what we've learned and integrated with other people so that their lives can be more full, rich, rewarding, whatever. But one of the things that we're also seeking is greater attendance. Would this be nice if a million people were listening to this? Mm-hmm. Of course, our ego would say, yeah, that would make me feel more worthy of I don't know. But I mean, but honestly, it really wouldn't.
That this venture is worthy of my time and energy.
Exactly, right? But if you and I are the only ones listening to this, or if you never listen to it again and I never listen to it again, we had this experience.
Yeah.
And we know that it's me loving me, attending to me, me deserving my own attention, attending to myself,
yes,
that is really what's most rewarding. Whether this ever gets any likes on Facebook or tweets on Twitter or tubes, what views on YouTube or whatever, those are nice things. And in the world's way, a measure of something, but I don't know really if it's a measure of something that really has the importance that we think it does. My suspicion is it does not.
Yeah.
But it's the world's economy, the mass consciousness of the more people paying attention to you somehow correlates or is directly in relation to how valuable or how important you are.
Well, that's why it's so easy, at least from my perspective, to talk about my personal experiences and to share real life correlations about what we do, because it's ultimately we're satisfying ourselves in this context. We are journeying within our own sense of worthiness and connection, and using that to find more connection and even greater ideas of worthiness. Because this process, I know for me, and we even said this last week, I always feel good, but even more importantly than that, the profound amount of understanding and connecting of dots and really expanding even further what I think I know or understand, this connection provides more words, more concepts, more feeling, more of all of it.
Right.
That you know, again, if you, that whole idea, if you build it, they will come. That to me is, once you get this in line, everything else is cake. Once you get this, once you get that, you know, once we get our individual, our individual little world into that place of alignment in that place, then everything is available, because you're no longer living in a separate, in the idea of that's over there and this is over here. It's all right here. It's all here. And, you know, for you guys out there listening to us, please understand this, this is serving us as much as we hope it serves everybody else.
Absolutely.
From my perspective.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's huge to me. That's huge and significant, because it doesn't put any onus on anybody. It's here it is. Here's what I understand this level of truth to be. Take it or leave it, explore it, play with it, see how it feels in your skin, see what it evolves for you. I can guarantee you that there are a bazillion little nuggets that can stimulate all kinds of shift and change if you're willing to entertain it.
Only a bazillion?
Only a bazillion, yeah.
Nice.
That was my favorite number, so I figured I'd go with that one.
So what I'm hearing is that we've created a self-licking ice cream cone that we're also offering other people to have a lick from.
Wow. Self-licking ice cream cone that we're asking. I'm going to have to sit on it. I'm going to sit with that one for a minute. A self-licking ice cream cone that we're asking.
Offering other people to have a lick from.
Okay. I'll just leave that there, because I have no idea how to respond to it.
That may be the cue that we're finished for today.
Well, again, the dive has been most enjoyable and most entertaining, and more than anything, most enlightening. And I appreciate that. I appreciate the amazing listening skills and response skills that you have in this, because it changes everything to be able to be heard, and then to be able to take hearing beyond that.
Yeah.
Is an extraordinary experience.
And I agree. And I feel that the same way, Jim.
Thanks, man. So to all you wonderful people out there in Adventures in Truth podcast land, we appreciate you. We're grateful that whoever is there listening is getting these nuggets and taking them to the bank. We appreciate you, and check us out on our website, www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Adventures in Truth Podcast. If you would like to listen to more or to explore all our offerings, visit us on the web at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com. We also offer video versions of our podcast. Visit our page on YouTube at Adventures in Truth Podcast. We would love to hear from you. Like, connect, and follow with us on Facebook. Want to book us for your next podcast or to speak at your event? Head over to our webpage at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com at the bottom of the page and send us a note. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to seeing you again at Adventures in Truth Podcast.